Hey, everybody, it's Michael Steele here. Now, I know you're waiting for the next big episode of the Michael Steele Podcast, but in the meantime, give a listen to this Michael Steele Podcast quick take.
To make this moment extra special, I brought on someone. I think everyone, not only do you know her, you love her. You just do, because she is that special. Tara Stetmeyer. Yes, yes, yes. She is more than the CNN political commentator that you see over at that other network. She's also got that ABC political contributor thing going on. She's more than that. And she's more than the former GOP communications director on Capitol Hill. She is the current host of the Honestly Speaking with Tara podcast. And she brings it every time. Every time. She is a political soulmate of mine, a dear friend. We have been in some wars and some trenches together, and we're in one right now, which is why I'm glad she could be here with us. You've certainly seen her from time to time on ABC's The View, where you were on that program for a little bit of a moment, right?
I have co-hosted a time or two over the last couple of years. That's correct, Michael.
That's right. Good Morning America and Nightline. She also made numerous appearances on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. We've never done that one together.
We have not, but you know who I have done that show with, who is still to this day, 4 years later, not speaking to me because of our joint appearance? Senator Rick Santorum.
Oh, okay. Well,
he is very upset with me because I handed his ass to him in 2016.
Oh, there we go. Show.
And we are CNN colleagues, and he has not spoken to me since then.
Wow.
Since August of 2016. Yeah. Well, grudge, you know, much? I call it like I see it. So.
Yeah, grudge much? Okay.
Guilty much, maybe?
I'm glad. Oh, yeah, baby, this is going to be live. Y'all strap in. I hope somebody got some wine, because you're going to need it to get through this one. I have the added pleasure of not only saying you're a friend, but you are a colleague. We are together at the Lincoln Project. And
yes.
And everybody is very familiar with the work of the Lincoln Project, which is trying to right the constitutional ship, and to be quite honest, to present a little bit of an enema to our Republican Party, to clean out some of the Trump-ish that has taken over, if you will.
Uncomfortable but necessary.
Uncomfortable but necessary. What got you? What was the moment where you said, yeah, I got to do more than what I'm doing, and I've got to take some risks, because you and I know, and Tara and I have talked about this, you know, it's tough when a lot of people that you got to play with and have been playing with over the years suddenly stop talking, and they won't return phone calls, and they make you feel like you're the problem, when in fact you're sitting there going, wait a minute, time out. I didn't buy all this crap that he's selling. Why did you? Why are you looking at me like I should have bought stupid, right?
Oh, my goodness.
So what's that moment for you that you said, I just can't?
Well, that moment for me was the day he came down the escalator. I've been one of the preeminent original Never Trump voices since the summer of 2015. I'm from New Jersey. A lot of folks, those who know me, know I often talk about being a proud Jersey girl. And I'm from North Jersey, which means that I was exposed to the New York media market my entire life. Right. So I'm over 40, and I grew up with Donald Trump bankrupting casinos in my home state of New Jersey, of his tabloid exploits being all over the place in the 80s and 90s with all of his dalliances with other women and those things. He was always a flashy, obnoxious jerk even back then. And he was a joke to those of us who know him best. They did not vote for him. They don't support him because they know that Donald Trump is a con man and a complete joke of a human being and a liar. So for me, it was very easy in 2015, once he descended down that escalator and gave that batshit crazy of opening speech about Mexicans being rapists and everything else. I said, oh no, not no, but hell no. What was shocking to me though, after that, and you know, him disparaging John McCain, not being a war hero, and all of these things, and you know, I was like, what, no, Republicans are not going to put up with this clown. Like, no way. I did not see it coming that there would be such a coalescence around him. I didn't see that coming.
Well, okay. So, and I'm glad you moved in that part of your journey, moved into that space, because I think that's something important to explore. What was it about what Trump said, did, or represented that no one else in media, politics, culture really was able to grasp, but a significant number of people around the country did, in your estimation? What do you think that was?
Well, I think it's different then than what's happening now.
Right.
I think then the media was derelict in their duty. They were enamored with the show.
Right.
And Trump knows that.
And the cash that came in
absolutely,
from the views.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Every cable news network had record profits after the 2016 election. So, and Les Moonves, who used to be the head of CBS, he said it during the election last time around. He goes, look, Donald Trump is great for the news business, terrible for the country. But we see where the news business, you know, decided to go with it.
Right.
You know, I'm not a reporter. I am a commentator. So I am beholden to no one but myself, because I, you know, I give my opinion on things. And even my own network, I love CNN, but CNN was as guilty as Fox and MS and everybody else for showing the rallies live.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, giving him all that free media. And Donald Trump may be an ignoramus on the whole host of things. What he's not ignorant about is how to manipulate the media, how to market. And he played the media like a fiddle in 2016. He knew that he could distract them with every shiny object thing that he said or did, because it was so unconventional. And so that created this sense of almost the Jerry Springerization of politics, which is what I called it. A lot of us watched Jerry Springer back in the 90s because it was a train wreck, not because it was quality TV. It's because you were looking at what could possibly happen next, and you were anticipating the shit show, right? So right. That's what a lot of, you know, our culture, unfortunately, has become very,
oriented.
Yes, yes. The sensationalism of everything with reality television and all of that. Politics was not immune to it. And Donald Trump knew it. And people, average Americans, not me and you, not people that are, you know, your audience who are smart, like political observers, regular people who don't live and breathe politics, they knew a persona of Donald Trump as the guy on The Apprentice who was beamed into their living rooms for 15 years as this flashy, strong, funny, you know, successful businessman that didn't take any crap and would fire people who were incompetent. That's who they thought they were electing. That is all a bunch of BS.
It was a persona
made up. He's not that guy.
He's not that guy.
But he convinced enough people that he was, and that's why he won. He had 100% name ID.
Yeah,
people knew who they were voting for.
And it was a critical part of the equation for him. The way I put it is he was able to, over 15 years, build an audience of viewers. And when he decided to run for president, having figured out the formula of, okay, where do I run? Which party do I do that from? He was able to convert those viewers into his voters.
That's correct.
And if you want to understand why he has a 40% floor, it's because those are his viewers. People who read about him on Page Six. Those are people who watched him hanging out with beauty contestants doing the pageants that he ran.
That's right.
When you hear stories about Donald Trump in the back room with beauty pageant girls, people are like, well, yeah, it's his beauty pageant. I mean, in other words, the psychology of it, he was able to change it. He was able to create an image around it that in any other circumstances, people will go, well, that's not right. Why are you in the room with little girls who are changing?
And bragging about it. I don't know anyone else that would be able to sexualize their daughter the way Donald Trump does on multiple occasions.
I'm like,
and it's on tape. It's on audio.
On tape, you know, of the man actually show. Referencing
yes,
engaging in coitus with his daughter.
With his daughter. And it's not just once. It's not a one-off. It's Howard crazy. Stern. It's The View. It's multiple interviews where he sexualizes his daughter and talks about, like, you know, well, what do you and Ivanka have in common? And she's like, well, we like golf and fashion or something. And he goes, well, I was going to say sex.
Right. I wrote, that's the one that I was.
You know, if she weren't my daughter, I'd be dating her. Or, you know, Howard Stern saying, you know, can I say this to you? Well, your daughter's a real piece of ass.
So this
what,
is the
what
this
father would have let somebody this, else talk about their daughter like that. And he's like laughing and agreeing.
Of course. So this is the moral cavity.
Yeah.
That the party has allowed to infect its political teeth.
Yep. Party that impeached Bill Clinton.
Thanks for downloading this Michael Steele podcast quick take. Now, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts where, guess what? You can review us. You can give us 5 stars. Oh, yeah. I love the 5-star rating. Or you can catch us on iHeart, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.